Book 9. Hercules, Horns and Havoc. Where were we? Oh, yes. Theseus and his mates are hanging out in a cave with Achilles, a river god. Achilles has been making a really big song and dance about how one of the horns on his head is definitely very missing. How, did you lose it? Theseus supposed he ought to show some interest.
Ugh, the agony, Achilles declared. Normally, I'd be blushing to tell you a story of when I lost the fight, but my opponent were one of the best and greatest heroes we've ever known. I gave him a good show, I'll say, and that shows a lot, I reckon. It's the taking part that counts anyway, isn't it? Now, tell me, have you heard of Deianira? In my day, she was the loveliest lady around. Everyone wanted to marry her. I went and asked her father for Andy myself, but so did Hercules. I was the only one who dared compete against him, I'll have you know, and he made a great song and dance about his labours and all that, but we're all rubbish. I reminded Deianira's father that I, unlike Hercules, for they were, you know, this time were before we were made like immortal and that, I reminded him that, kind of humiliating, actually, that I should be competing against a mortal, and moreover, that I, unlike Hercules, were not a foreigner, no, but a king of the water that actually flowed, like, through his land. I may not have completed many strange and arduous deeds, like, but at least I can say the Queen of the Gods, like, you know, she don't hate me yet anyway, so I feel like that's a good thing. Anyway, and furthermore, I actually said this to Hercules himself, I'll have you know. It's hardly a glorious thing to claim Jupiter as a father when this ultimately, like, does mean that your mum's, like, you know, a bit of a slag, doesn't it? So, virtuous mother or divine father, but you can't have it both ways, mate. That's what I told him. I did. I said that. Of course, you know, Hercules didn't much like this. Now, a good hero, in my opinion, you know, in my book, a good hero would control his anger, but that's not really what Hercules is known for, is it? No. So, of course, he told me to shut up. Words aren't really a strong point, are they? It's more of a physical bloke, innit? And then he went for me. Now, see, luckily, I do love me a fig or two, so luckily, even I would too heavy for him. Even me, I know. So he couldn't lift me right away. Like a rock, I were. Eventually, of course, he did get me. You know, I'm an honest man, so I'll tell you how it were. He simply leapt on me back and he crushed me. Just got to admit, you know, fair dues. I let him have it. And then I turned into a snake because, like, I remembered I could do that. But thing is, like, you know, modesty don't really become a hero, do it? So I guess, you know, that's kind of how it is. Because Hercules then yelled out, "A snake? Is that all you've got? I was killing snakes in my cradle. I defeated the 100-headed Hydra before breakfast." And, you know, then he throttled me. So I turned into a bull then instead, but of course he's dealt one of those too, so he beat me up real easily and then ripped one of my horns off for good measure. I donated it to the goddess of plenty, so that's something I guess, but it weren't really my finest hour. As soon as the sun came up, Theseus and his mates headed off, not really fancying more of Achilles' very boring, what long-winded stories, or his weak tea. But, you know, who really cares about them? Like, why bother talk about Theseus? Theseus is so boring, man. We've all heard about Theseus. No. Why talk about Theseus when we could talk about Hercules? We're all thinking it, let's not lie. Back to Hercules. So, Hercules won Deianira. Big surprise. He was on his way home with her when he reached a bloody massive river. Hercules paused to think about how to cross it. Another labour! He rubbed his chin thoughtfully, or he'd seen other people think like that, so he kind of imitated it. Just as he was seriously pondering his predicament, a centaur named Nessus appeared. He really fancied Deianira for himself, so he offered to give her a lift across the river. And then, you know, never give her back. Hercules agreed, which was a very stupid thing to do, because we all know what centaurs are like, but Hercules was a hero for his strength and not his brains. Anyway, despite her far more intelligent protests, Nessus took Deianira and Hercules plunged himself into the river. "He's only gone and done it," he cheered himself on. Hercules versus River, another labour completed. Look at him go! Hercules, of course, made it to the other side of the river and was so busy congratulating himself, he almost missed his wife's yelling as Nessus tried to carry her off into the sunset. You lying bastard! Hercules chased after them. You promised to look after her! Because if we can say one thing for Hercules, he is a man of his word. From one of his labours, Hercules had a bunch of arrows dipped in the poison of the Lyrnan Hydra. He used one of these to shoot and kill Nessus. Not one to be upstaged, even in death, Nessus took off his shirt, made sure it was coated in his own now poison-filled blood, and gave it to Deianira, promising her it was a good bona fide love charm. Why she would want to keep this from the man who tried to rape her, or why she would believe someone who is evidently a compulsive liar is completely beyond me, but the story moves on. Some arbitrary time later, and things were generally going pretty well for Hercules. Unfortunately, rumour had it that he was cheating, and Deianira caught wind. Naturally, this didn't go down well. At first, like any self-respecting woman in ancient mythology, she burst into tears. But then, suddenly, she remembered herself. What am I doing? Deianira said to herself. She was probably pacing up and down as she did this, probably in a long gown, tear-stained. I'm better than this. I'm the sister of Meleager, for Jupiter's sake. Why waste time crying when I could just, like, kill the other woman and have done with it? I'd like to see Hercules try and cheat on me again after that. Deianira considered how best to go about some casual murder. She decided perhaps the best thing to do first, just, you know, in case he wasn't convinced of her devotion to him post-murder, was to send Hercules the shirt of Nessus to, you know, cover all bases. Now, we must remember that Hercules was possibly not actually cheating on Deianira at this point. He actually did kind of adore her, so the first thing he did was wrap the shirt around his shoulders and went about all his very pious and heroic duties, such as making offerings to the gods. Which makes it all the more tragic when the poison shirt began to melt his skin off. He tried to ignore it at first and go about his day, but even Hercules, the strongest man in the world, was finally, slowly and agonisingly defeated. When he could bear no more, Hercules fell to his knees, his flesh and bones searing in pain indescribable, and he raised his hands to the stars. Enjoying this, are you, Juno? He managed between tears. What has my life been for, anyway, other than to be tossed about and tortured by you? Can I even call it my life, when it's been in your slippery palms since the day I was born? Besiris, Antaeus, the Hydra, the Bull, the Birds, Kerberos, the Amazons, Golden Apples, Dragons, Centaurs, Boars, Man-Eating Horses, the Lions of Nemea, what was it all for? I have borne the sky upon these shoulders. And what have I to show for it? To think that some men, after all this time, still believe in the gods. Hercules was beside himself. In a last-ditch effort, very in keeping with character, he found the messenger who brought the shirt and, ignoring his pleas, swung him 3-4 times around his head. Think, you know, Miss Trunchbull in Matilda, sorry. And flung him into the sea. Some say he was thrown so hard, and such was his fear, that he turned to stone. After all we've come across in this mad story, I'll believe it if you will. Hercules then set about making his own funeral pyre. He chopped down trees, set them alight, carefully laid his treasured lion skin on top, and lay down on it, using his trusty club for a pillow. You gotta hand it to him, Hercules knew how to put on a show. On Olympus, even the gods began to feel a little bit sorry for him. Jupiter turned to address them all. Oh, I do feel the love in the room tonight. I know that your love for my Hercules is really just a show of your devotion to me. All right. Well, just because you're all such good sports, I'll let you in on a little secret. Hercules isn't actually going to die tonight. Oh, no, no. He'll be joining us right here, right now, as one of us. A god. I know it's a bit unorthodox, so here's a survey for you all to complete to give me your feedback on the experience. Don't hold back! But do remember, I'm the reason you're all here, and also I don't care what you think. My boy deserves a break. I'm looking at you, Juno. And so the gods applauded, except for Juno. She frowned, but no one noticed. And Jupiter raised Hercules up to the glittering stars. Atlas grunted a bit because, you know, he felt the added weight. Back on Earth, Alcmene, Hercules' mum, was hanging out with Ole, the girl rumour said Hercules had maybe, possibly, definitely been sleeping with, who also happened to be very pregnant. I'm not passing judgment here. Anyway, you know, let's just go with it. Anyway, they were just hanging out when Alcmene started recalling the birth of her prodigious son, as mother-in-laws do. Oh, you'll be fine, dear, of course, but it was the worst experience of my life. Most painful thing I've ever been through. I was in labour 7 days. Seven days. I thought I might die. Terrible, truly. Screaming and agony and blood everywhere. Most traumatic time of my life, actually. Oh, you'll be fine, though, dear, of course, I'm sure. Most natural thing in the world. Beautiful, beautiful, some say. Iole had gone quite pale, but Alcmene didn't notice. I told Jupiter what I thought of him, all right. A lovely maid of mine, clever girl, worked out it was all Juno causing me trouble. Of course, she found the goddess of birth, Lucina, sitting cross-legged by the altar on the way out of our house, and so she said to her, "Happy day! My mistress has just delivered a healthy baby." Why, the goddess was so surprised she leapt up and I gave birth right away then. Hilarious. Of course, my maid was turned into a weasel for her trickery. I still see her around here, sometimes. Or, well, I think I do. Iole, evidently a patient girl, patted Alcmene on the arm. It's okay. At least she wasn't family. Did I never tell you about my stepsister? She was turned into a tree because she accidentally, like, broke the branch of a tree which also used to be a girl. There was blood and twigs all over the place. I've never looked at a forest the same way after that. Both women would have probably moped about like that all day if Iolas hadn't appeared in the doorway, about 50 years younger than he'd been that morning. Hebe, who was married to Hercules on Olympus, had done this as a favour to him. She decided then to put aside her magical ageing abilities for good, but Themis, who enjoys a casual prophecy, dropped in that at some vague yet complicated point in the future, Jupiter would probably ask her to make two babies grown men for the sake of avenging their father or some ridiculous story like that. So basically, perhaps she'd better hang on to her magic for now. When the other gods heard this, they were a bit pissed off because they all had someone, a favourite pet human, who they wanted Hebe to make live forever. Eventually, Jupiter had to break the crowd up. Guys, shut up. Shut up. Get over yourselves. Don't you think that I don't have some mortal that I'd like to save? If I, king of the gods, of all of you, master of the universe, had to submit to fate, then so do all of you. This did indeed shut them all up for a little bit. Now, one of these favourites of Zeus, who we could not save, was Minos. We don't really care about him so much, but the point is, he was worried that some guy called Miletus might kill him. We don't really care about Miletus either, but long story short, he ran off, met a girl, and they had twins, Byblis and Cornus. Another long story short, because even for Ovid this one is really weird, Byblis fell in love with her brother, Cornus. She knew she shouldn't, but she did. What can you do? She decided to write a letter to her brother, confessing everything, which really is never a good idea. It's a bit like sending that drunken text to your ex or your crush, you know, once it's out there, you really can't go back. Sure enough, Cornus found the letter a little bit disturbing, to say the least, and tried to kill the messenger for it. Don't shoot the messenger does take on a whole new level in this story. Anyway, when Byblis heard, part of her wasn't altogether surprised. Well, it was a little bit of a stupid idea, come to think of it. She paused. They do say these things go better in person. I should have just spoken to him properly. Byblis, like many of us, wasn't really made for online dating. In fact, she continued, let's
blame the messenger. No one in their right mind would ever accept a love letter from him. He probably did it all wrong. I'll speak to Corners myself. Believe it or not, this didn't work either. Corners fled, and Byblis chased him until she could run no more and was overcome by her tears and turned into a fountain. Lovely. The story of this miracle might have come as a shock to Crete if they weren't so used to miracles already. See, nearby was a bloke called Lygdus. He was doing pretty all right for himself, but his wife, Telethusa, was pregnant. I'm afraid we'll have to kill it if it's a girl, you know, he informed her over breakfast one morning. They're a terrible burden. He downed his cup of milk, slapped his wife on the back and left her to let this news sink in. Telethusa didn't like this at all, understandably. She worried and she worried, the day of the birth drawing closer and closer until one night, remarkably, the goddess Io came to her in a dream. Babe, don't worry. No matter what the baby is, raise it and I'll keep an eye on you. Everything's cool. I'll let myself out. And she did, out the bedroom door. So Telethusa had her baby, and when it was inevitably a girl, she hid this from her husband, and in fact everyone other than the baby's nurse, and raised her as a boy. They decided to name her Iphis, which Telethusa thought was great, because it was a unisex name, so technically she wasn't really deceiving anyone. If this isn't a severe case of denial, then I really don't know what is. All was fine and dandy until, of course, Iphis's father decided that Iphis really ought to be married at the ripe old age of 13. He engaged Iphis to Ianthe, a beautiful girl from down the road, and Iphis really loved her. But Iphis knew that she was a girl, of course, and that Ianthe was expecting a husband, and she was wrought with panic. Oh, why did this have to happen to me? She wrung her hands as she paced up and down the bedroom the night before her wedding. Her mother had tried to delay the marriage for as long as possible, but there were really only so many excuses she could come up with. Why couldn't I just have a normal curse, like a half-bull brother or a sister turn into a tree? Why do I have to be stuck like this? Telethusa felt terrible about this endless deception and for the imminent heartbreak that Iphis was about to go through, for unfortunately, Anthe really did only want a husband and not a wife. Not to mention, she couldn't bear to think about what her husband would do when he found out they'd actually raised a daughter all this time. So she seized Iphis's hand, marched her to the altar of Io and Isis, and threw herself at the holy ground. Goddess, you promised us all those years ago that you would look out for us. Everything's cool, you said. Everything's going to be cool. Well, everything is not cool, okay? It's not cool. You need to come and sort this mess out because this is all your fault and this is really getting very stressful. So please, for the love of all the gods and earth, just help us out. The goddess did not respond, believe it or not, but her whole temple shook horribly like it was seized by an earthquake and there was an eerie rattling noise. Not entirely convinced, Telethusa and Iphis went home. And yet, as they were walking, would you believe Iphis turned into a man? What a stroke of luck. What a coincidence. So the marriage went ahead. No one was murdered. Everyone got what they wanted. Iphis married Ianthe, the love of his life, and everyone lived happily ever after. Not.